Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Tim Wilson with the Wilson Firm for Appellant Dr. Francis V. Angstadt. This case is before the Court on appeal from a decision of the Superior Court. The primary issue on appeal is whether Appellee Red Clay Consolidated School District complied with the teacher termination statute when terminating Dr. Angstadt's employment. Specifically at issue is the portion of the statute that states documents supporting the termination be properly placed in the teacher's personnel file prior to the notice of termination. The parties extensively briefed the issue of what should constitute a teacher's personnel file, and although the lower court did not specifically define a personnel file, by virtue of its decision, it appears as if it accepted Red Clay's functional approach.
In this area of the law, is the word termination a term of art? My understanding of the facts were there was a decision not to renew a contract. Is that different from termination during the period of a contract?
I believe it's synonymous with termination, but it happened at the end of the school year.
So for the purposes of this statute and the case law, terminate means cancel a contract while it's still in effect, and it also means a decision not to renew a contract.
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that work with a non-tenured teacher? You would think that if you don't have tenure, you could simply say, I'm not going to renew the contract, but is there some expectation that you're going to be renewed?
There is no expectation, but the teacher is, her employment is terminated nevertheless.
I understand that. It comes to an end. But my question is, why can't you just do that for no reason at all?
Well, because of Section 1410B, you can do it as long as the reasons are set forth in the teacher's personnel file prior to the notice of termination.
Well, that was the purpose of my question, because by stating it that way, you basically give a non-tenured teacher tenure, because your contract must be renewed in the absence of good cause not to renew it. Is that the law?
That's the way I understand it, Your Honor.
Okay.
So the bottom line is teacher contracts, by virtue of excellent lobbying effort and statutes, aren't treated the same as other persons' employment contracts?
No, Your Honor.
Such as judges, when their 12-year term expires, they have no expectation of reappointment. They don't have to have their employer established that they've been terminated. They're not automatically renewed for another 12 years.
Correct.
Teachers are in a much better situation under this statutory framework.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
All right, well, let's go. Before we get into the personal file and the functional equivalent of a personnel file, as I understand it, the statute says you can consider the performance appraisal.
Yes, Your Honor.
And in this case, whether the performance appraisal was in the personnel file or not, it was a proper consideration. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. The performance appraisal has to be in the teacher's personnel file prior to the notice of termination.
So even if the statute says you can consider a performance appraisal, if a performance appraisal took place but never got into the file, it's as if it never happened?
Yes, Your Honor. And also, it gets extended beyond that. It has to be in the personnel file, and the teacher must have been put on an individual improvement plan and given an opportunity to improve prior to the notice of termination.
Is it your position that the General Assembly has required as a matter of law that there cannot be an electronic personnel file?
They have not defined that. And I would say that that perhaps a school district could have an electronic personnel file. However, in this case, the collective bargaining agreement says that there shall be one physical personnel file housed at the Human Resources Office, and Dr. Andrzejewski also gave testimony to that effect. So to answer your Honor's question, I think if the school district said, okay, we're going to have an electronic personnel file, in this day and age, that's something that could quite possibly be done. But I think that there would have to be some notice that that the personnel file is an electronic file.
Well, help me understand the record and perhaps the statute. I understand that there were two ways to approach this case. One of them would have been for the school district to say, we don't like you raising your voice and yelling at students, so we don't like you grabbing ice cream out of their hands and whatever else they were concerned about in these emails. But it was incumbent upon them to put it in the teacher's personnel file, give the teacher a chance to take some corrective action. And the school board admits it didn't do that. But you seem to equate that scenario where you have these incidents that wind up in the file with an opportunity for corrective action with this performance evaluation. And I thought the performance evaluation was more routine, systematic, and institutionalized. Is that correct?
I agree with Your Honor, and I don't equate those with the performance appraisal. The performance appraisal is a tool under the Delaware performance appraisal system.
So then tell me how, when I was asking you the question about the performance appraisal, you said you can't consider the performance appraisal for two reasons. First, it wasn't in the personnel file. And second, there was no opportunity for corrective action. But it would seem that neither one of those is really addresses the point, because the statute says, and it doesn't say if it's in the personnel file, the statute says you can consider these performance appraisals.
In the context of the DPAS evaluative process, and there's two prongs in Section B. There's the one, the performance evaluation, which encompasses the DPAS. You have your lesson analyses, and then the lesson analyses evolve into the performance appraisal. If there's ever a lesson analysis that's deemed unsatisfactory and could put the teacher in danger of termination, they must be put on an individual improvement plan and given an opportunity to improve in those areas.
Well, if we look at page 11 of the answering brief, they purportedly quote from a performance appraisal that says, one significant area of concern relates to the interaction with the students.
Yes.
And so it goes on to quote that at length. My question is, why wasn't that something the school district could consider? Because there was no, it wasn't in the file, there was no opportunity for corrective action, or why was this irrelevant to the school board's decision?
Because it, in order to base a termination on it, it has to be in the file prior to the notice of termination. And it wasn't. It was not drafted until July 7th. And my client got her notice of termination in April. Now, they could have placed my client on a individual improvement plan beginning the next year based upon that performance appraisal. And if she did not improve under that improvement plan, then they could have terminated her at the end of the following year.
Right. Well, let's suppose your position in this appeal is correct. You prevail. I assume the result's going to be that when people send the emails, as they were in this particular case, they're always going to wind up in the personnel file. The teacher is going to be given notice that the email's in your file, and then the teacher is going to have an opportunity to grieve it, to use your term, or to take corrective action. But we're going to basically be generating a paper trail of all of the school district's concerns with the teacher. Is that correct?
If they place it in the personnel file, yes.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. We have to understand the implications of ruling in your favor. And you're asking us to say, unless it's in the personnel file, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter how many times you've raised your voice with the students. It doesn't matter that you've taken the ice cream away. It doesn't matter that you can't get your class under control. Even though all of those things might have happened, if they're not in your personnel file, they just don't exist.
And yes, Your Honor, and there's a very easy way for the school district to remedy that, and that is to have a meeting according to the dictates of the collective bargaining agreement and present the teacher with the disciplinary document in the proper way. And if they do everything according to how they're supposed to do it, then that document would stay in the personnel file.
But this is a case where there's no dispute that your client actually received these documents because she signed for them, right?
She signed for one of them, I believe.
Only one?
But there is no dispute she received them, but in the course of receiving them, it was just kind of informal communication with the administrators. She was not put on notice that there was any danger to her employment in terms of termination or further discipline, because they weren't presented to her in the fashion that would raise that flag with her. If they had been presented to her and said, look, Ms. Angstadt, here's this document, we're going to put it in your personnel file, then she's on notice that some type of discipline or some type of action at the end of the school year in terms of termination could result.
When you're asked to sign acknowledging receipt of this warning, reprimand, whatever, which one was it that was signed for?
This was the ice cream incident with Dr. Hawking.
Okay. When you're asked to sign for that, doesn't everyone understand that this is now a personnel document? Whether it gets into the file or not, but this is related to personnel administration.
My client did not. It was presented to her on a very informal basis, and even at Dr. Hawking's deposition, he said this was just a mere written follow-up to a discussion we had, and it was not a disciplinary document. So there would have been nothing to put her on notice that she had done something so bad that she could potentially be terminated for that.
Now, if I just want to find the limits of your position, if there's a physical personnel file and a stack of documents to be filed, that because they're behind schedule in clerical work, getting them into the file, that if someone's contract is not renewed and it hasn't gone from the inbox to be filed into the folder itself, that you have to have your contract renewed because there's no compliance with 1410B.
Right. And taking a step further, if the document is presented in a way that would put the teacher on notice that it could have some negative consequences, then the grievance could be filed right away. Here there was no such communication to that effect. She just got an email and the principal offered some corrective advice, and she took it as that. She didn't look at it as, this is really a huge issue, and I could be terminated at the end of the school year for this.
Well, we keep talking about terminated, but this is a non-renewal. So help me understand this. Let's suppose that you just had a teacher who was not tenured, and they did an average job. And the school board said, we can do better than average. We want to do better than average. Let's get someone else. As I understand your argument, that's not an option. If you hire somebody and they're average, you're going to have them forever.
No, that can be addressed through the DPAS, the performance appraisal system.
That would
identify the areas of concern in the performance. And then the teacher would be put on a program to improve, and if she did not meet that level of improvement, then she could be terminated pursuant to the first prong of the statute and the DPAS. And I see I'm in my...
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, I would.
All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Barry Willoughby. For the record, I represent the Red Clay School District, the appellee. With me at council table is my associate, Mike Stafford, who helped work on the briefing. You know, I'd like to go back to one of the earlier questions, and that is the statutory scheme and whether we're dealing with a termination or a non-renewal. We're plainly dealing with a non-renewal, and I think it's a difference than a termination. The way the statute is set up, there are basically three classes of employees, the way the statute works. One is tenured teachers. Tenured teachers can be terminated during the school year under Section 1420 of the statute for reasons like incompetency, immorality, et cetera. Non-tenured teachers during the school year have that same right. So during the school year, if you were a terminated non-tenured teacher, you would still have to show the reasons under 1420, which are immorality, incompetency, et cetera. A tenured teacher at the end of the school year is automatically renewed unless the school district can show one of the reasons set forth in Section 1411 of the code. 1410 specifically says that when it comes to the non-renewal of a non-tenured teacher, the school district is not limited to those reasons set forth in 1411. So it makes a very clear distinction in the non-renewal of a non-tenured teacher between and a tenured teacher, and says you're not limited to those reasons. So the lower court found, I think it goes to Your Honor's question, that really a non-tenured teacher can be terminated for any reason, as long as it's not a constitutionally impermissible reason, such as race or something like that. But the school district has full discretion. And I think there's a fallacy that's being developed in the appellant's argument, that is that the reasons have to be disciplinary in nature. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's a situation, as Your Honor indicated, maybe the school district would feel that they could do better. Maybe they just feel the teacher's not a good fit. There are other things the teacher could be doing better in performance or otherwise. But it does not have to be a discipline. Yes.
Budgets are cut, would this be a way for what would have to go in the personnel file? Would there be a memorandum that we have to cut 10% of our staff and it goes into the personnel
file? I hadn't thought of that, but I think under their argument, yes, you'd have to have some kind of a memorandum of the personnel file that we're cutting budgets. For the tenured teachers, there's a section that says reduction in force due to the budgetary concerns.
How would you characterize the reason in this case for the non-renewal?
I don't think it's disciplinary per se. I think they felt she just was not up to the level that they wanted. No. She had these problems of yelling at kids in class, the ice cream incident, the other things that you had pointed out, poor classroom management. There were three items listed in the non-renewal letter that she received. So, again, I don't know the district was taking the position that she's incompetent. I don't think they were. I think they were saying she just is really not what we want in this position.
Well, that's where the appellant's argument seems to blend the two parts of the statute. One, the first provision, which, as I understand it, the school district said they weren't acting under, is where you put something in the file, you give an opportunity for corrective action, and it doesn't take place. And so that the argument from the appellant seems to be, that's really why you fired me, but you didn't meet the first prong, and you admit you didn't meet the first prong. So let's just focus on what the school district did and what they could properly consider.
Yes.
Do you agree that these performance evaluations are properly considered, whether they're in the personnel file or not?
The performance evaluation itself was done after the notice of non-renewal was given. What was an issue here, a lesson observation done by Dr. Hocking, in which he identified the same concerns that were in the memos and the other write-ups. And the question is, under the statute really doesn't address whether or not a lesson observation could be other documented materials. This doesn't say that.
Your position is it was proper for the school district to decide it wasn't going to create a voluminous personnel file per se with a lot of these concerns. For whatever reason, it decided not to do that. But yet, when it came time to decide on renewal or not, it was perfectly proper to simply say, this teacher doesn't fit in.
I think that's correct, except that under the statute, I mean, I think that the concept is the teacher should be told about these concerns, such as the yelling, and that all happened. I mean, you know, that she got the emails relating to that. And in fact, and Mr. Wilson, I think, inadvertently said there was only one signed write-up. There are two in the record that she signed. The second one was the March 21 incident that was clearly a disciplinary issue. But I think Your Honor's correct. I mean, I think the idea is that we're trying to give the teachers some kind of notice during the school year that there are some concerns, whether they're disciplinary or not, just as a fairness matter. But it does not mean that it's that we're restricted to discipline in making
decisions.
Well,
that's why. Good. Well, that's exactly where I want to be for purpose of this question.
Yes.
Let's assume, hypothetically, that you have a personnel file or you don't. There's no functional equivalent.
Okay.
And let's assume that this personnel file didn't have all of these emails and everything in it at all. As I understand your argument, it's not dependent on there being a functional equivalent of a personnel file because the school could properly terminate this teacher anyway. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right, so let's focus on that part of the equation. What you could do without the personnel file and what was the record basis for not renewing?
Well, there were five documents referred to in the briefing. There was an incident in November where she was counseled for yelling at students. Secondly, it happened again later in November, November 29, when she again had another incident with students. Both of those were documented by emails. She then had an incident, I believe, on March 14, which was a formal written documentation of a very similar incident. Just 2 days after that, she got a formal write-up on March 21 for this ice cream incident where she was very plainly told, you know, this is discipline, don't, you know, this should not happen again. All of those items, I believe, first of all, I do think they're, I guess I'm begging the question, I do think they're properly part of the personnel file, but I think the district could certainly rely on those items in making a decision not to continue her employment, not to renew her employment, because she was given notice of all those things. I mean, certainly she was on notice. It's not like she's coming at the end of the year and kind of being bushwhacked with documents in a secret file someplace, things like that. So those are the items I think the district was going to, and they believe that she simply was not at the level of a teacher they wanted. They certainly were not accusing her of being
Let's assume hypothetically we have a teacher with no incidents at all, non-tenured teacher.
Yes.
No emails, just nothing. Could the district say, well, we've just decided not to renew your contract?
I think the district would have to give some kind of a notice about what the reasons were. Maybe, for example, we just don't think you're a good fit. We think that there's better candidates out there, other you know, examples like the court has given. But I do think under the statute, at least the spirit of the statute, there should be some notice to the teacher that this is the reason that we're not going to renew your contract.
Does that have to go in a personnel file or not?
Again, I think it's substantial compliance as long as the person's told and they know and they understand. I think that's what's required, and I think that's what is considered by the statute to be what we're looking for.
What continues to confuse me here is in the beginning of your arguments, you mentioned non-renewal of a contract
Yes.
for a non-tenured teacher. And now we're at the point, apart from what's in or isn't in a formal personnel file, hard copy or electronic, put that on the shelf for a moment. The notice goes to her that her contract is not being renewed. She then requests what she calls a pre-termination hearing. Your brief on page 13 refers to the administrator scheduling a meeting. And then in a letter after that meeting, the administrator says, after your hearing on June 7th. Now, if this is a non-tenured teacher whose contract is simply not being renewed, what is the point of a termination hearing?
Yeah, the language is probably not appropriate to call it a termination hearing. It's a non-renewal decision. But under 14 Delaware Code, Section 1410, the way it works for a non-tenured teacher is that they get a notice of non-renewal that doesn't say anything about the reasons for the non-renewal. It just says you will not be renewed. At that point, statutorily, they have a right to request a letter from the district stating the reasons for the non-renewal. So in this case, Dr. Engstad did that. She requested a statement of the reasons for the non-renewal. She received a letter from the district identifying the three items. At that point, under 14 Delaware Code, Section 10B, she has a right to a conference. It doesn't say hearing, but it's a conference with the superintendent to discuss those reasons. And the statute says that the superintendent's decision after the conference is final and conclusive. So statutorily, what happens is a non-renewed, a non-tenured teacher, I should say, gets a notice just saying, we're not going to continue your employment. We're not going to bring you back next year. If they choose, they can ask for this additional statement of reasons. And then again, if they choose again after that, they can ask for a conference, quote unquote, with the superintendent to review the reasons.
Yeah, the reason is confusing to me is I now understand that the teacher under the statute can ask for a conference to discuss the reasons that
yes.
she's not being renewed. But your brief says she requested a post-termination hearing, and then the letter says after your hearing. And the concept of a hearing rather than a conference suggests to me that there's going to be evidence offered on both sides, the evidence is going to be weighed, and then some objective decision makers going to decide whether the evidence cuts in favor or against renewal. That doesn't happen?
That does not happen, Your Honor. And I apologize, our language should have been stricter on that. It's really not a termination hearing. It is the teacher gets the notice of non-renewal, the reasons are set forth, and then she has a conference with the superintendent. It's informal, in which those reasons are discussed. But there's no testimony
but
or any formal hearing.
But does the statute contemplate that that's when at least the teacher has an opportunity to say, let me talk you out of this?
Yes. Yes, that's exactly the purpose, I believe, Your Honor. In fact, the statute says the conference with the superintendent will be personal with the superintendent himself. He or she cannot designate someone else to attend that conference under Section 14.10.10b. So I do think that's the very purpose of the statute, for a non-tenured teacher to have a chance to tell the superintendent why he or she thinks you've really made, you know, a decision I think should be reversed.
Help me understand, from a mootness point of view, the measure of damages and the remedy in this case if the teacher prevails. As I understand the record, she got another job after this non-renewal with the Capital School District. She then completed the work on her doctoral degree and retired. So if the teacher prevails, what's the remedy?
We have not addressed that formally, obviously, in the briefing.
It will help us understand why the case is not moot.
If
there was no loss in pay.
Well, I believe, and Mr. Wilson probably will be able to add to this, but my belief would be there would be a period from September of 07 until she returned to work, because that was the start of the school year following her non-renewal, until she was reemployed, I believe, at the Capital School District. I don't have the date of her reemployment, but I think there's a window there of damages only, because she's not seeking reinstatement.
So it's the break in service.
Yes.
Okay.
And I guess I haven't really looked at it, but I believe there probably would be some potential impact on pension benefits, for example, that could result from that break in service. The only other thing I had in terms of a formal area to address is a concern I have in terms of the implications, as the court had talked about, of ruling for the appellant, the plaintiff in this case. What they've done really is to totally bypass the procedures in the collective bargaining agreement. You know, we've got a statute that allows DSEA to negotiate with the school districts. They agree to a collective bargaining agreement. That agreement has a grievance process in it, and that process was not used here. So if you look, for example, the McCoy case that the appellants cite, in that case, the teacher and the union went through a binding arbitration process. An arbitrator ruled that the only document in that case that was that could be considered had to be expunged from the file. And at that point, then there wasn't anything that could be relied on. Here, the same situation, I think, applies. If they really think these documents are improper for some reason under the collective bargaining, because all we hear in their brief and in their argument today is that the reasons they're not properly placed have to do with the collective bargaining agreement, then they're obligated to go through the exclusive remedy, which is the collective bargaining process, and not just grieve it, but go to arbitration and have an arbitrator decide that these documents should be expunged. And in addition to that, if Ms. Angstad were to contend that her union didn't, you know, do its job, her remedy is to file with the Public Employment Relations Board a claim saying that the union failed to fairly represent her. And there's a fairly old case, Smith versus GM, in the private sector, where the Chancery Court, affirmed later by this court, said that's exactly the standard. That's the way things work.
If you prevail, how is this functional personnel file really going to work? Who's going to decide what's in it? Who's going to decide what's not in it? And how is the person going to be on notice so if they want to pursue a grievance, they can? If we just stayed with the traditional notion that a personnel file is identifiable and something is either in it or it's not, and the teacher's given notice about what's in it and an opportunity to object, then as time goes on, everybody knows what's going on. In this case, if you don't physically, even electronically, put something in the personnel file, and we get to the point of a non-renewal or a termination, and then we reconstruct the personnel file by finding what was the functional equivalent of prior correspondence that should have been in it, how's that a workable standard?
Well, I think that, again, we're the first fallacy of the appellant's argument is that it has to be disciplinary. I don't think that's the case. To non-renew a non-tenured teacher, as we talked about before, I think that if they just felt she didn't have all the right stuff they wanted to continue her on as a non-tenured teacher, they could do that. In this case,
now, my question is not the nature of the item. My question is, how is the system workable? If it's a letter saying you're spectacular, we think you're the greatest drama teacher ever. Mm-hmm. They would probably want to say that commendation should be in the personnel file. Mm-hmm. But if we don't have a personnel file that's developed over time in a way that's known to all people, and we reconstruct it when it's time for a termination or a non-renewal, what's going to be the rule to tell us what's in it and what's not?
I think you have to look at the nature of the document. I mean, an accommodation would be something that could be, if you look at, for just by analogy, the Personnel File Inspection Act, that lists things like commendations, performance appraisals, disciplinary issues, things like that. So what we're arguing for is you're really looking at the nature of the document.
Well, how would it work in this case if she had, exercised her rights under the Personnel File Inspection Act? What would she have been given?
She'd be entitled to everything defined by that statute wherever it's kept, whether it's kept at the local school where she worked or at the central office. Under that statute, it does not matter where the physical file is. It's the items identified in the statute that she's entitled to see. And I think I don't think we address that in the briefing, but I believe there's case law that says that. But definitely, from our standpoint, the statute identifies the item, not the physical location. And that's what the employee's entitled to see. And if the district or any employer, because that statute applies to private employers as well, doesn't do that, they're subject to penalties for doing that.
But is it your position that the collective bargaining agreement here contemplated a different procedure than that?
The collective bargaining agreement, we don't know because we never went through the grievance arbitration process. And that's where I think that there's a fundamental error. And that's why, in collective bargaining, for example, there's all kinds of concepts, the law of the shop and for example, if the union sort of ratified a process where there wasn't strict compliance with the statute, that's an issue for an arbitrator to decide. And I guess our point is that if you're going to rely on the collective bargaining agreement to define this and to say these shouldn't be in there, then you have to, as the union, go through that grievance process. That's the exclusive remedy for dealing with violations of the collective bargaining agreement. And if the union didn't do it for some bad faith reason, because they're entitled to make judgments about what they want to pursue or not, then the remedy is to go to PERB and file an unfair labor practice. Her remedy is to go to PERB and file an unfair labor practice against the union for breaching its duty of fair representation. So that would be if they're going to rely on the collective bargaining agreement to say these materials somehow should not be considered, they have to do what the plaintiff did in McCoy. Go through the grievance process, have an arbitrator look at the case and make a decision. And that's a binding decision. If the arbitrator says all of this is not properly there, you didn't get notice of it or whatever, then we're in a different situation. But to bypass that and come to this court and say, that's your job now, I think is really, in violation of what the whole statutory scheme was set up to do. I just had one more point, and that is she did not disagree with these five items. She only disagreed with one. I mean, if you look at the emails, for example, she is saying that she agrees and this won't happen again. The one item that she really disagreed with was the March 21 written warning, cautionary notice for the ice cream incident. They filed a grievance for that. Then she got the notice of termination, and her representative, the union representative, said, let's hold that in abeyance. Let's not even consider it and go through the grievance process until we go through the superintendent's conference. So, again, they had the obligation not to just file a grievance, but to pursue it if they were really serious about it, which I think is a whole other issue. That's for her to, and her union to work out. But if they really think there's some basis for removing that document, you can't just file a grievance and leave it at that. You've got to go through the whole arbitration process. I think I'm out of time. I don't know if there are questions or I can address her.
You are out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd like to first address the right to inspect personnel files. Ms. Angstadt's union representative, Tim Barchak, did inspect her personnel file following the notice of termination, and the district gave him her personnel file, and none of this information was in it. So clearly what Mr. Willoughby is saying should happen did not happen there. And I think, that kind of serves as a waiver. If you're going to ask for the personnel file to see what's in there that the termination can be based upon, and there is no information in there, I think the district has waived any right to rely on those documents. As far as the collective bargaining agreement argument goes,
what happens if a file is lost? Does that mean that it can't be recreated or reconstructed?
Well, if you mean the personnel file itself?
Yes.
I don't know. I hadn't considered that, but I would assume that there would be something somewhere that would say what was in the personnel file. There would be a record of the disciplinary actions that were taken against the teacher, as well as the other information. But I don't know.
Would it be permissible to reconstruct it in advance of the decision to not renew the contract?
Well, I think it would be permissible to reconstruct it, but another issue I wanted to get to is that the collective bargaining agreement specifically states what the personnel file is. We're talking about an electronic file and things like that, but it specifically states that that it's the record that is kept at the Human Resources office, and there's only one of them. Mr. Barchak asked for that. They gave it to him, and this information wasn't in it. Again, going back to the collective bargaining agreement, Mr. Willoughby says that these things should have been grieved. Well, because it wasn't in the personnel file, there's no notice given to the teacher to know what to grieve. And if you do grieve it, what's your remedy going to be? It's not in your file, so you're just going to have to grieve it for the sake of grieving it. And I think that's really leading us down a slippery slope, because if a teacher just gives any type of document, or an administrator gives any type of document to a teacher, whether it be a handwritten note, a sticky note, an email, the union is going to be required to grieve everything, and it's really going to become unwieldy.
Let me ask, let's assume that your position is correct. These items were not in the personnel file, and there's this notice of non-renewal. And then your client says, well, I'd like to have this meeting and find out why. And at the meeting, your client is told, well, you just have this history of activity, and based on that, we're not renewing your contract. What's your position?
If there's no documentation to support that in the personnel file, then it's illegal. And as far as the termination hearing or conference or however you'd like to term it goes, the teacher is entitled to have her union representative there, and the union representative speaks on her behalf and explains to the superintendent, and in this case the deputy superintendent, as to why the termination is improper. And at that meeting, Mr. Barchak told them there is nothing in your personnel in her personnel file to base the termination on. They didn't say anything. Even prior to that.
Well, that's, I understand, but that's why I'm asking you the question. You seem to be saying that if it's not in the personnel file, which suggests it would be cause for non-renewal, that you can't simply say, we've decided you don't fit in. So if we go back to this particular situation where the school district decided, we're not putting the emails in the personnel file, but it comes time for the renewal, and they say, you know, this teacher is just disruptive. We don't like the way she's interacting with her students. And so when she comes in, she's just told, we don't like the way you're interacting with your students. Your position is if that was never in the personnel file, it's not a basis for non-renewal.
That's correct, and that's the way the statute reads.
All right, read that part of the statute to me.
It says, the board will provide such reason or reasons in writing and a copy of this chapter no later than 5 days after receipt of such request, provided that the stated reason or reasons must have either been contained in the teacher's performance appraisal and the teacher was provided time to correct any deficiency through an individualized improvement plan. That's where I would say that would be the first prong. And the second prong, or other documented materials properly placed in the teacher's personnel file prior to said notice.
Okay, but you don't really read them in the with the or, because you're saying even the appraisal performance has to be in the personnel file. Because
yes.
The way you read the statute, it has or, but as I understood your argument, you're basically reading or out of the statute.
No, I'm not reading or. I see where you're going, but the first prong wasn't regardless of when the performance appraisal was written, they still did not satisfy the first prong because she was not placed on an individualized improvement plan and given an opportunity to improve.
Right. So it's fact specific to this case. If the performance appraisal had been timely, it might be a different issue. But since it was after the fact, it's not relevant here.
No, even if the performance appraisal had been timely, it still would not give rise to a legal termination because she was not placed on the plan and given an opportunity to improve.
I'd like to ask you one question just to clarify in my mind about how this plan process works. If you get a reprimand and the teacher says that will never happen again, what's the plan?
The plan is based upon observations of the teacher teaching her class. In this case, Dr. Hawking would come in and watch Dr. Angstadt teach her classes. Then he would write up a form at the end of it saying, here are the things you did I liked, here are the things you did I didn't like. All of her lesson analyses were satisfactory. Dr. Hawking testified to that. And then Dean Rumschlag wrote the performance appraisal, and that's where the things came in that were negative. So we're having a hard time figuring out where the negatives in the performance appraisal came in when she had satisfactory lesson analyses. But the other, I think what you're asking about is a written disciplinary document or reprimand. That doesn't play into the first prong in terms of the performance appraisal system.
Okay. Yeah, I know you're out of time, but I have another question. On the second prong, which is documents placed in the personnel file, is it your position that even if there is a letter from, let's say, Rumschlag to Dr. Anstadt dated March 21st, and she grieves it, clearly has notice of it and its contents, and grieves it, unless it's placed in her personnel file, it can't be used as a basis for non-renewal?
Correct. The statute plainly says it's got to be in there.
So number two, or the alternative of placing it in the personnel file, is not designed as a matter of policy to give the teacher notice of adverse comment about her. It's just sort of it has to be in the file, and we don't have to have a reason for saying that.
Well, I think the reason it says it has to be in the file is so the teacher is put on notice, and it gives her an opportunity to pursue any type of avenues to get it taken out of her personnel file through her union. With regard to these emails, the teacher has no way to get those out of the personnel file because they're never put in the first personnel file.
And that pursuit was happened, or actually occurred, with at least one incident.
The one official reprimand, and Mr. Willoughby referred to it as an ice cream incident. It wasn't the ice cream incident. It was a different thing. But yes, because that was presented to her in a way that would have put her on notice that this is going in your personnel file, and this is an official official reprimand.
So make sure I'm clear. Even if it's a complaint, she clearly knows about it, or the teacher in the abstract clearly knows about it, grieves it. There's some resolution of the grievance. But if none of that is in the personnel file, none of the substance of it can be used as a basis for non-renewal.
Correct. But, you know, I mean, that's a hoop the school district has to go to. If a disciplinary document is given to a teacher and it goes through the grievance, you know, I mean, it's going to go in her personnel file, or at least you would hope that it would go in her personnel file. And if it doesn't, you know, that's an error that the district has to deal
with. I guess if you're
a
teacher whose contract's not being renewed, you hope it doesn't go in the personnel file so you can find this technical reason to avoid non-renewal of the contract, even though you know all about the substance of it and you've had a chance to grieve it. The mere fact that it's not physically put in the personnel file bars the school district from relying on it for non-renewal purposes.
I think it does, according to the plain language of the statute. But I would like to add that Ms. Angst that never had that opportunity because it wasn't presented to her in a way where she could grieve these documents that they're based on
the
termination.
There was one, wasn't there?
There was one, and it was at the end of the school year, and it wasn't resolved.
Okay. Council, thank you very much for your argument. We'll
thank you.
Take the case under advisement and adjourn.